Hey everyone, it's Erin with Tall Ships America, and you are listening to A Bark, A Break, and A Schooner Walk Into a Bar. If you've been enjoying the podcast, please be sure to subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts. We definitely appreciate it. Today's guest is Amali Knobloch with Hudson River Sloop Clearwater in New York. She's also the vice chair of Tall Ships America's Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee and on the board of the National Women's Sailing Association. We talk about the value in having uncomfortable conversations, how important it is to create space, and we bond over the angst of being the middle child. Amali, welcome. Well, thank you so much, Amali, for coming back on the pod. We got to know you during your mini episode. We spoke about Hermione Granger, mermaids. It was very illuminating. It was very illuminating. So I am looking forward to kind of diving into who is Amali. But for those who didn't hear that mini episode, which I highly recommend they go back and listen to, can you introduce yourself and the organization that you are with?
Sure. Thank you for having me. My name is Amali Knobloch, and I'm the Outreach and Engagement Manager at the Hudson River Sloop Clearwater.
So what does that mean exactly?
It means a lot of different things. I have kind of like blended some of what my old position was to be the sail logistics coordinator with some of the things that I had been working on in my free time. Clearwater is one of those organizations that has been around for such a long time and has such long and historic roots, you know, all over the Hudson Valley. And so I felt, you know, when I first started working here in 2017, I was just so impressed with the community up and down the river that all of these people would see this boat and immediately know, you know, the backstory, or would say, like, I had a really wonderful experience on this boat when I was a kid, and now my kid is also able to participate in the education programming. And wanted the opportunity to, you know, meet with people more and figure out how to unite people from Albany, essentially, all the way down to the city, and thinking critically about how to have there be like one, not homogenous, but like one homogenous sound, you know what I mean, of people who love the organization and support the mission and love the Hudson Valley and want it to exist, you know, in 100 years, and want to see the ecosystem thrive. So the community engagement part of it is, half of it is making sure that we have good relationships with the towns that we like to dock in up and down the river, and towns that we would like to dock in up and down the river. But some of it is, you know, creating strategic partnerships with other or like-minded organizations. Some of it is simply just supporting our partners. And some of it is, you know, going out to town halls or going to community festivals that have themes that, you know, may not be 100%. You can't necessarily draw a straight line through from Clearwater to that kind of like festival or like community fair or what have you. But taking the opportunity to engage with people about what we do, about the river, and meeting them where they're at, which I think is really important.
Can you talk a little bit about Clearwater's history? She has a rather unique history. All of her tall ships have unique histories, but hers is a little bit special. Do you mind talking about her history? I know like scraps of it, so I'd rather hear it from someone who talks about it all day.
Yeah, so Clearwater was launched in 1969. In the mid-60s, Pete Seeger, the folk singer, was living in Beacon and basically was looking at the river every day as this place that had been consistently polluted for decades, and was kind of sick of it, and as every community member should do, looked in their own community and said, like, what can I do to make this place where I live better? And how do I do that? And got a group of friends together after seeing this painting of Hudson River sloops on the river, and raised money to build a replica of a historic Hudson River sloop and to use this huge distraction, essentially, on the river to draw people's attention to it, to get them to pay attention to the river, to look down and see there's this big, beautiful boat sailing here, and there's people playing music on it, and there's people saying we should protect it, and it is sailing on paint and oil. And, you know, there are other organizations that emerged in that same time period, Riverkeeper and Scenic Hudson, who do work that is a little bit different than ours. But basically, there was an awakening in the mid-60s that we had to do something. And what I so admire about the foundation of the organization and the founder, you know, mainly being Pete, is that I, in my job, get to say that all of these different kinds of things are true. Because, you know, Pete was a really, really interesting man. And I think that a lot of people now know him in the latter half of his life, the second 60 years of his life. That was about environmental activism. But the first 40 were very much about activism of all kinds. Clearwater has youth empowerment programs every year. And as I began to research ways in which I could connect Pete Seeger and, you know, a 16-year-old today, I began to uncover so many interesting stories about him, you know, that even though his parents were musicians and he went to Harvard for a year, he traveled all around the country learning protest songs, learning work songs, you know, meeting with migrants, being involved in the civil rights movement. Obviously, you know, his most well-known story is being blackballed for allegedly being associated with the communist movement and the repercussions of that. But it was this very interesting man, and learning all of the things that he stood for was very relatable to me. And it makes me think that the organization is relatable to others. We kind of have our fingers spread in a lot of different pots, and Clearwater is just this wonderful place where people come together to spend time with each other, but also to celebrate this place that they live in. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily just their town, but it is like the entire watershed, that this is such a cool thing. This is such a wonderful place that we live. Look at what is going on beneath the surface. Mm-hmm. How do we all come together? Let's play music and share that experience, you know? And so it is unique, I think, in that way. And I think what is a privilege about Clearwater and what makes it easy to work there is that they have been, you know, on the forefront in some ways of breaking down some of the negative aspects of sailing, period, but tall ships as well. And so when we're thinking about sexism or racism or any of those kinds of things, you know, this is an organization that has had, you can go into the archival footage, that there are Black faces, even, you know, from the launch video, that there are Black faces on board and there are Black faces at the festival. And, you know, we recently had the Women's History Month webinar that just like celebrated decades worth of women captains who were like, no, we could come to Clearwater. We had a great time. No one undermined us. You know, we could execute effective leadership. And it was a place that we could all belong in. And, you know, I think that that is really something to celebrate.
I do too. I have chills. I'm all inspired, Amali. I know it was, I loved what you said in that it was just as simple as looking down. And I think that's really interesting, because you do kind of get caught up in everything that's going up around you. And sometimes it is as simple as just kind of focusing your energy by looking down, your community, your ship in this respect, you know, the Hudson River too. And I really love that concept. I think that's really cool. My only real knowledge of Pete Seeger is going to see, Bruce Springsteen did did the Seeger sessions. And I remember, so that was my introduction to Pete Seeger was through Bruce Springsteen. So great concert. I was like, oh,
my introduction was a little bit different. Actually, my mom went to college in upstate New York. Mm-hmm. So she like had like this peripheral knowledge. She knew who Clearwater was. She knew who Pete was. But I kind of like knew him through that civil rights lens, because she is a civil rights lawyer. And so the environmental part of it, which is like, you know, my passion, right, then became secondary to that. So it was really very funny to think about this person and to think about folk music and the way that it has kind of transitioned over the years and what it meant to people and how it became, you know, this, the song that we think of as the civil rights movement in the 60s, you know, was a folk song. And so, right, you know, it really just makes me think about, you know, how we connect with people. But it's always a very funny thing for me to think that that is the pathway that I, you know, was right, introduced to Pete and his work.
Where are you from, Amali? How did you first discover Tall Ships?
I am from Baltimore, Maryland. Best city in America, greatest city in America. I'm sorry, that's the quote. And I love it still to this day, which is not the question. Anyway, but
that's okay.
I grew up
we can
Baltimore,
talk about Baltimore.
Which means that, you know, I had some of those privileges, which means that, like, in my elementary school, in my middle school, we were going out and participating in the Living Classroom Foundation's field trip. In middle school, I did an overnight on the Constitution, and I guess the main way is that, like, my dad was a sailor, and so he's way more interesting than me in that, you know, he, like, has this classic story from the past, though, that could never happen today, where, like, he ran away from home, and he, like, forged his aid so he could join the German merchant marines and, like, sailed around the world. It's, like, a whole thing. Anyway, so we would go, like, to, I believe it's Cambridge, and, oh my gosh, I can't remember the name of the boat that's out there, but I, like, would take my friends, my friends from Baltimore City with me. I'm like, no, we're going to go on a boat. We're going to go sailing for the day on the Eastern Shore. And so we would do things like that all of the time. And, you know, I remember being a kid and my dad would still go away to sea for a couple of weeks to get his fix to be on boats. And then when I turned 18, my 18th birthday gift was a plane ticket. And inside of a binder that was pushed across the table at me, and the 3-week trip on the Tully Moore. And so that was the first time I had spent three consecutive weeks away from home, I think. And of course it was also on a boat, and I have very fond memories of it. I often wonder if, like, I seem like I was having a good time, but it was, like, you know, the greatest experience. And I always think of it again in my way of, like, talking to young people or talking to adults as well about, like, why it's important for young people to be involved in sailing, is that I think that, you know, it was a very significant turning point for me as a woman, and being a teenager and being comfortable in the skin that you're in, you know?
Right,
and
right.
So I often think that, like, my young adult years, you know, the 18 to 21 age bracket, would have been so different had I not had that experience in terms of, like, what I was comfortable looking like and sounding like and being like in other spaces, you know, not having a choice on a boat.
Right. I've always heard wonderful, wonderful things about Tully Moore and that program, which just a moment of silence.
I know.
But do you remember who your captain was?
I don't remember who my captain was. The main guy. I don't care. It's like I can only remember children's names because it's my job.
I got you.
I'm not as good at grown-ups.
They're taller than 3 feet. They're just like,
I'm sorry.
It's like, who are you again?
It was also like 2012. We're now talking about 10 years ago. And I don't know about you, but I try to, like, black out so much of that, you know, those teen years. So something may have been lost, you know.
That's okay. We don't have to dig into that too much. But 18 to 21 is pretty formative. And that's a whole other podcast that we could have about mistakes made and poor choices in those age, that age bracket. But yeah, absolutely. I can definitely see 3 weeks aboard Tully Moore sailing around Southern California. Just so incredibly formative. So you're 18, you just got off of this amazing trip. Then what? Did you go run away to see your father?
Oh my God, no. I was like, oh, that was so fun. I wish I could do it again next year. But by that time, I was too old. No, I tell my parents this all the time now. I'm like, you made a mistake. You should have sent me on boats way earlier. But then I went to school and wanted to be an environmental scientist. I didn't know quite how. I don't know if I said this on the last one, but I feel like I did because it's a good joke. When I was a kid, I was like a toddler, and then I was like, everyone would be like, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I would always say I wanted to be a motorcycle, which, okay, I get it. I stand by it. And then right after that, you know, I think when I was a little bit older, then I wanted to be a marine biologist. So I always had a love of nature. I always felt like I had a special connection to the ocean. I love swimming. I love snorkeling. I loved exploring. So that was like my thing. And then as I got older, I guess I got anxiety about being like pigeonholed into one thing. And I was like, well, I really like on land as well. So then I was like, okay, well, I'll do environmental science. I'll do environmental studies. Eventually I'll probably like get back into like research, and maybe I'll do research on a boat, or maybe I'll work in a lab, whatever, because while I am so personable and so fun, at the time I was very antisocial, and my dream was to like work with one other person, or maybe by myself in a lab, or like sit at a computer and, you know, do data analysis or that kind of thing. I was all in, well, this is going to be like me doing the most middle child thing ever, but So it's just so annoying coming out.
Because I'm a middle child too, so yeah. So I knew you were a kindred spirit.
Yeah, so it's not. I'm not a lone wolf, but I'm perfectly comfortable like being alone and not feeling like you're like having to like force the workplace atmosphere, which I think is awkward.
Right.
And what's funny about the job that I have now is that when I was young, even into my 20s, even past the 18 to 21 bracket, I did not know how to communicate with children at all. I was so awkward around them, and I didn't know what to say, and I didn't feel like I could do child talk, not baby talk, but like
right.
talk to people, like, you know what I mean? And so...
I know.
One of my best friend, one of our favorite jokes to tell each other is when I went to her family cookout, and like her niece was like 4 at the time, and like came up to me with a leaf, and I just like didn't know what to do. I was just frozen, and I was like, oh God.
You know, it makes me feel any better. I talk to them like little adults. I'm like, Sue, how are those taxes coming along this year? Yeah, that's tough. I'm like, yeah, like...
Like, okay, you know, I can do it for work for some reason, but I think in real life at the time, it just wasn't translatable. So part of being from Baltimore and loving the ocean meant that I was going to go and work at the National Aquarium in the harbor. And I was like, oh, I'm going to do this forever. So it's fine. And so I can just say that now, but I felt like I was so good at it. And I like loved talking to the kids about what was going on behind me that was in front of their eyes, or what I had, you know, on hand.
Right.
But in real life, it just was not working.
Right.
And, you know, I feel like I'm very influenced by my family. Like I said, my mother was a civil rights lawyer. And so I think about justice all of the time. And my dad
explains
was a
lot,
sailor.
Actually, Amali.
Yeah. And right when I left school, my sister had a baby. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, God, this kid is going to grow up, and I'm not going to know how to communicate with him. And something has to be done. It was just like another summer of like looking for internships or a job after school. And I love to be in New York. And so I ended up going and doing a seasonal summer position at Hudson River Park.
Oh,
and in their like summer programs. And I think that was a turning point.
Yeah.
I think what I was lacking was some training,
right,
what
right.
is actually so important now in education, in experiential education, and in non-traditional education, outdoor education, all of those kinds of things. And, you know, not being hired and then saying like, these are all the things you're going to talk about, go do them. But being hired and saying, we're going to do 2 weeks of training
right.
and we're going to make you do this like a million times until you do it right.
Right.
You know, it's actually really, really helpful. And
right, who knew?
If you just learn how to do things, you can do them. So weird. As I was tabling at so many events, so many people would come up and say, oh, have you heard of the Clearwater? All of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be like, no, I'm not from here. I'm from Maryland. I don't know anything about New York. So, yeah, I don't know. And they were like, oh, well, it's this, but on board of a boat. And I was like, oh, okay. That is something that is manageable to me. I would love to be able to get back into sailing. I want to stick with environmental education. Mm-hmm. Seems like the perfect blend. And, you know, looked it up and applied to be an educator deckhand. And in the interview, I just like still laugh about it to this day. The person that interviewed me was like, oh, do you play any instruments? Because, you know, we're like a very musical group. And I was like, no. And I like, will never do that ever. So I'm here to talk to children. You know, it's just like I respect it so much, but that's not
children.
My ministry.
That's
not my ministry. So anyway, but then I did that like right after. So this was 2017. I did that for the fall season.
Mm-hmm.
And afterward, and okay, let me say the things that are positive about it. For me, someone who, you know, in the best case scenario would love to go to sea
mm-hmm.
and like spend time voyaging and be that kind of person. That's not accessible to me at this time in terms of what I am comfortable with. And I believe in pushing your boundaries, but I don't want to put myself in a situation that I, not that I can't control, but you know,
yeah,
just
understood.
There are factors to manage. And
yeah.
So at the time I was like, it's New York. 2 months is not that long. I didn't know about the days off schedule or anything like that at the time. So I was like, 2 months is not that long. It's New York. If something bad happens, I will get off and get
right.
on the train and go home. I won't be, you know, I won't
right.
be
stuck
somewhere that
yeah.
I can't leave. And
yeah.
so that was important to me. I had a great time, but I was like, oh, I'm never going to do that again. So it's
not.
It wasn't bad. I had a great time, but I was just like, okay, I
yeah,
get it.
Good.
I actually think I want to work in an office.
So,
and then I did that. And then I went back to DC and I worked in the policy office of the National Audubon Society.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was looking out the window every day like, oh God, why am I inside when I could
right.
be outside?
Right. I know.
And
I
had to get out of there.
Yeah.
I had to get out of it. Yeah. And which again is a job that I like, but the whole like, oh, let me get on the subway and go to the office every day was like a little bit mundane. It's something I would do part-time, but not something I think I want to do full-time.
Yeah.
You know, and so I left and I went to the New York Botanical Gardens, and then halfway through that time Clearwater called and was like, "Oh, you should be the onboard educator,"
mm-hmm.
which is all year long and, you know, leads and facilitates the onboard programming. And I did want the opportunity to do that. And
yeah.
it does still work with what I consider to be my lifestyle and that I can
yeah.
get off and get on the train and go home. And I really do love it. I really do love it so,
mm-hmm.
so much. I
mm-hmm.
think that, you know, boats are an amazing tool, not only to communicate with people, but especially young people, again, you know,
mm-hmm.
calling to mind, like how people can change, and students of all ages, not just the 9-year-olds, but the teenagers and the post-grads as well.
Right.
You know, they're different when they leave than when they come.
Absolutely.
And so just being able to see that every single day is so rewarding that, you know, I want to stick with it.
Yeah, I don't blame you. There is something about seeing that evolution happen right in front of your eyes, and that's something that I don't get to see that much. I have it with my interns for the most part, like, you know, very mm-hmm. during the summer. But I don't get to see it every day. So I am jealous that you actually get to see that every day. And it just seems kind of, it does reinvigorate that passion, you know. It can be really challenging, but at the same time, hearing you talk about it is, you can tell that this is something that you really enjoy doing. So it was a little bit of a roundabout way to get there, but that's fine. If there's nothing this podcast hasn't taught us, is that there are no linear lines when it comes to tall ships.
Right. And we can cut out all of the like sidetracks as well if we want to.
Well, you have to figure out what doesn't work. And I think that's mm-hmm. just as important as finding out what does work. I was, for a long time, I kind of joked about myself being a Jane of all trades. So, cause like I've done just about like every weirdo job you can have, from like selling Beanie Babies in a mall car, like from a cart in the mall to, you know, this job running around chasing after tall ships. So it's, but I think it's just as important figuring out what you don't like doing. And I think you figured that out, cause you said yourself that Audubon Foundation just, wasn't, you thought it was exactly what you wanted to do, but in reality, staring out the window all day wishing you were out sailing was the eye opener. So I feel you.
Yeah. And now I have the perfect balance where like now I'm the outreach and engagement manager, which means at my discretion, mm-hmm. I get to go on board. And that works just fine for me, because there's plenty of days where I'm like, oh, I'm not leaving the house today. It's just not happening, and I can get so much work done. But then there are so many days, like last week, and a couple of days this week, and a couple of days next week, where I'm like, oh, well, I'm just going to be on board, and it's necessary.
It's necessary. I'm really jealous. As I sit in my apartment in Providence, I'm jealous that you have that flexibility. I would love to be on board a boat. So, but I, you know, you are so passionate about it, and you have mentioned your mom's a Civil War lawyer. That's not, don't tell her I said that.
Opposite of that.
Civil rights lawyer, and it makes a lot of sense, because you are, I wanted to talk to you about your work with our Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee, but before that, too, the National Women's Sailing Association, because I know you're on their board as well, and you know, you mentioned before the empowerment and the women leadership.
Young women at the helm.
Thank you. So can you talk about what the National Women's Sailing Association does and your involvement in it?
The National Women's Sailing Association has Adventure Sail, which is their 30 plus year program that gets young women on the water one day a year, mm-hmm. To introduce them to the sport of sailing, and help them out with like junior membership to be able to revisit their local sailing club. And again, sailing of any boat of any kind, I actually think is so, so important for women. And, you know, the program was created by these really dynamic, wonderful women who have kind of like forged the path in that area of sailing. And, you know, I had the chance like hear some of their stories over the last couple of years, and you know, just all of it that they had been subjected to and the things that they had to overcome. And the idea of paying it forward is something that really, really resonates with me. Right. So obviously in the pandemic last year, we couldn't do it. This year, we revamped the program a little bit, adding some, you know, really intentional language around the kinds of participants that we wanted to work with, making sure that we're thinking actively, because the program was designed to bring young girls to the water that wouldn't typically have that opportunity. Right. And so just being a little bit more intentional about what that looks like and holding it all on one day. Typically, sailing clubs could have an adventure sail when it, you know, fit in their calendar. And this year we're going to do Adventure Sail Day on August 14th, where there will be sailing clubs and tall ships all over the country that are participating in this day of bringing girls out on the water to learn how to sail and to experience the powerful feeling of mastering this kind of all of these different skills, you know, right. All of the different things that are unseen and that are seen that are impressive to young women and are, mm-hmm. are important. And, you know, I think we see so many messages about like being in STEM and what that means. But, you know, I think that sailing fits into so many categories. And for me, you know, very much has that added physical piece.
Right.
A physical mental connection where you're figuring out what your body is capable of, mm-hmm. And thinking about that in new ways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they brought me on to participate in that program because of my work with Clearwater and the Young Women at the Helm program.
Right.
You know, which has done, Clearwater has 3 youth empowerment programs. So Young Women at the Helm, Young Men at the Helm, and Queer Water, which is LGBTQ plus allies at the helm. Yeah, which is really fun. And, you know, those programs have been going on for 20 years. We did Young Women at the Helm first in 20 years ago, and then added Young Men at the Helm and Queer Water 10 years ago. And, you know, again, it's just like providing people the space to have that experience. You know, taking all of the barriers away. One of the things that Clearwater does that's insane is just like, whatever it is that you need to come on this boat, you don't need it. Bring yourself, you know, have clothes on your body, and that's it. But if it rains, we'll give you a raincoat. We're going to give you a sleeping bag. We'll give you a tent, you know.
Yeah.
We're going to feed you. If you can't get here, we're going to get you here either by train or by car. We're going to figure it out. You know, nothing for us is going to keep you from having this experience. And so, you know, it's 3 days, it's 2 nights. And the goal is, you know, that same kind of thing where you want these, in this case, if we're talking about young women at the helm, young women to leave with this new experience and this new understanding of what they can accomplish. And, when we did in 2019, I asked them to kind of write like a letter to themselves on the first day, as once that we were on the third day, and they were all just like so sweet and like heart wrenching. And like, I thought I wasn't going to make any friends. I felt like I was weird, but then like, I really like all these girls and I built these bonds with them. And I didn't think that I would ever be able to do something like this, but now it's made me think differently about my future and the kinds of things that I'll be able to accomplish. And, oh, this, you know, thing that we talked about really piqued my interest. And so maybe that's something that I want to study, you know, in college. Right. And it's just like things like that. So again, when you're talking about feedback, we as the like administrators always feel like, oh, this is the most wonderful thing that they could participate in. But it's so nice to be able to read the things that they write or share.
Right.
That is what feels to me to be that critical turning point that I was talking about for myself.
Yeah, absolutely. I was not strong in math. I never felt that I was. And so to even think
relatable.
About like, I loved science, but I was like, oh, I don't want to be a scientist. You know, and like there was like, it was, and my mom was a teacher. So I was like, again, going back to the kid thing, I was like, I don't think I'm going to be a teacher, but even then, so it does feel so, your options feel so finite when you think of STEM. You're like, I don't want to be a scientist. Like, I'm not really, you know, I don't want to go into tech. I don't want to write code. So to actually go on board a ship and see those STEM skills played out in a non-traditional way, all of a sudden it really opens up to a woman what the options are. It's not go and be a scientist and do research. It's not go and write code. It's not go and be a teacher, you know, in a classroom. It's not be a mathematician, you know, which can be very focused. It's experiential education. It's, you know, becoming a captain of a tall ship. It's so much more than that. So I do think having, you know, really does open up your eyes to that. So I really appreciate everything that Clearwater and all of our vessels do, and that it just kind of breaks down those barriers. It's exciting. I have chills as I wear my sister's under sail t-shirt. So, but I like you, it's really exciting to see. That must be so fulfilling, these young women coming on board as one thing and then leaving us empowered, and, you know, they can go back and tell their friends that they were a captain on a tall ship. Like, they furled sails, like, in the middle of a storm. Yeah. Like, when was the last time you spent a night on board a ship? There's something very empowering about that. I hear you.
What I think is great about boats, well, what I think is the truth about everything, but what I think is great about boats is that what we've seen in the last year or two is that you actually cannot ignore history, you can't ignore art, you can't ignore civics. Right. So as it turns out, it's like you actually need all of the subjects to be, you know, educated in a well-rounded manner. You can't just have the STEM. Right. And that all of these different factors kind of play into whatever is the thing. Right. And so, you know, I agree with you, and I think that it opens up more doors for people who are artists or musicians or, you know, what have you, right, to see sailing as something that is accessible to them and be able to say, like you said, like, I'm not a mathematician or, you know, and I don't feel like that is something that makes sense for me. But, like, there are ways that every subject that you can think of can relate to the kind of experiences that you're having on board, especially, you know, when education is involved. So yeah, I mean, I just think it's a really wonderful opportunity for women. Yeah.
That kind of leads me into the work that you're doing with the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee with Tall Ships America. Like I said, your mom is a Civil War lawyer, civil rights lawyer, was, I mean, it sounds like she was incredibly influential on you, because you are so passionate about speaking out about this and speaking about it in general. And we were speaking earlier how much I appreciate you really challenging things that people are saying within this community, because me as a white person has been very complacent, and it's been a real eye-opening experience to be part of this community and being challenged by everyone on that committee. And of course, what's going on in the world at large, and just really thinking about, I grew up in a very white suburban town in Barrington, Rhode Island. You can't get much more, I don't know, white than that. So do, you know, this, I really appreciate having the opportunity to speak about these and to feel as though we Tall Ships America are moving forward, slowly forward, but forward nonetheless, about challenging and changing the tall ship culture for the better. So do you want to speak a little bit about your role in the DEI committee?
Sure. So I am the vice chair, as it turns out. Which is still weird to say, but it is true. That is a true statement. And, you know, I think I work really well, and I'm on a really good team with Eden, who is the chair, and, you know, with all of the leaders of the subcommittees. And I think that, you know, we're very much on the same page. I think that these conversations are hard to have, I think. I think that where people get, even those people who mean well, where they get afraid is that they're just, like, afraid to say the wrong thing. Exactly. Or don't necessarily know how to say the right thing in the right way, or just express how they feel genuinely without it coming across in a way that is not good. But I admire TSA for taking on this huge work, you know, to do, because they cannot individually micromanage every single boat that's going on. And so I think that it is really nice to have these small group conversations. It's really nice to be able to have these discussions and make these forward motions with a group that spans the age demographic, you know, which I think is really, really important. Not because we all agree, but because I think that as it is received publicly, no one wants to feel like they're not being represented.
Right.
And that, even though I feel like, you know, we do all agree and we're all very much on the same page, and even though some of us are, I would say, not as well versed in some of the topics as others, I think that we share the same goals. And right. So I guess in my participation, there's been a lot of just like, as you said, which is a nice way to say it, which is just like challenging others, where it's just like, you know, here's the thing. This is what I think is the truth. I think this is what is the truth. And I think that the people who are white on the committee and, you know, in the world often feel like they have neutral thinking. And so they're like, this is my lived experience. And so my lived experience has to be true. And while that sometimes can be true when it comes to matters of diversity, equity, inclusion, justice, all of those kinds of mm-hmm. things, it's like that is very much often not the case. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I it just calls to mind like one conversation we had recently where someone was like, okay, well, I didn't really think that they meant it like that. And then it was me and one of the other committee members who is a woman of color and was like, I think that you need to understand that like you're thinking of things as unintentional or like let's assume that people have the best at heart is right. like a very like white way of thinking about it. Whereas like the people who are like Black or Latinx mm-hmm. or Asian or whatever, or queer are like, actually we are very familiar with this kind of talk and we right. know like what are the, not subjects, but you know what I'm saying. The like messages beneath what is the actual statement. And so, and how yeah. to, yeah, yeah, exactly, subtext. And how to perceive those things.
Right.
And so, you know, those are some of the hard questions we have. But I think it's really important to not be afraid to like tell white people that they're white. You know, it's like, okay, you're being, this is the case. And if you want to be better, you have to look at it from the other side, and you have to be able to take into account all of the factors that are at play in people's experiences and realize that your experience in being self-confident almost all of the time is a privilege that most of us don't have
right.
and that people of color and people who are queer and women mm-hmm. are always second guessing ourselves and overthinking what we're doing and making sure that we're saying things in the right way mm-hmm. and making sure that we don't offend anybody and just like doing the most all of the time and like figuring out how to play by the rules.
Right.
Where, you know, especially when it comes to sailing with white men, it's like you're not necessarily thinking about that.
Right.
So yes, I do want you to be uncomfortable. I do want you to feel uncomfortable a lot of the time because we do too. You know, join us in right. the shared uncomfortableness as we work through this thing right. together. You know, none of us get to feel like we're having a good time because a lot of this stuff is hard and it's negative, so to say. You know, like right. people right. are, you know, feeling hurt or feeling like they're not a part of our community, which is absolutely what we don't want.
Right.
And there are like, obviously there are big things to take on, but there are a lot of little changes that we could make to make right. Tallship America, but Tallship right. period, a more inclusive, supportive, and an open place for people.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And one of the things I definitely wanted to bring up and I want to recommend that our that everyone has a chance to read, and I'll include it in the show notes, but your, was it a blog post article in Women Who Sail? And you said, mm-hmm. and it was so good, Amali. It really was. Like every sentence, I was just like, damn. I was like, that's really thoughtful. Like that's really good. I wanted to like copy and paste all of it and then like sprinkle it into like our marketing, our DEI marketing stuff. I was like, oh, this is really good. So, and giving you full credit, of course, because it was really good. But one of the things that definitely struck a chord, one of the many things that definitely struck a chord, and I know I brought this up before, and speaking of Tallships America as an institution, but you know, it's, as you said in your article, you said it was, it's so easy to criticize the institution as a whole, but it's really what we need to do, what we need to work on is evaluate what changes need to be made in our own personal life and at our own personal level, because you know, it's, and I'm using air quotes, which no one can see, it's easy to make the institutional changes. You know, you can make a blanket statement. You can put in the work to create the policies and you can hold people accountable. But ultimately what it comes down to is you actually putting in the work for yourself and overcoming your own internal prejudices. And I firmly believe that everyone has them just because of the way society is and how media is and what we're surrounded by. And it's really hard to, you know, to even question yourself and to really kind of hold yourself accountable for your actions, for what you're saying. And I think that's so important. It really is. And obviously it's not something that happens in a day. It's a lifelong relationship, like with yourself. It's a lifelong conversation that you have to have with yourself, constantly questioning, constantly challenging. But I think that's, and I told you, you know, I am just so impressed that we as a whole, as a committee are even at this point. It's been a long time coming and it's a privilege to be a part of it. It really is. Mm-hmm. So.
I think that it's been really nice over the last couple of years, and even I would say since 2014, for people to slowly becoming acquainted with the terms of like systemic whatever it is, right? And I think that is really important. But I do also feel like it is easy for the people who are in power to say, the problem is systemic and we need to change the institutions. And right. I agree, but it also takes the onus off of all of the people that make up the institutions from taking personal responsibility. And again, being uncomfortable every day and realizing that, you know, certain things are happening or not happening in your everyday experience. You know, I feel very much like we're in America. So if you don't come into contact with a person of color, something is going on,
right?
Which means that, you know, like, let's look at the history of your town. So of course, like, you're growing up in your town, it's a nice place, whatever, but like, what are the things that have been set up to orchestrate the fact that you didn't ever come into contact with a person of color growing up? You didn't meet another person of color until you went to college, which is like a crazy thing. Or saying like, well, I don't know where to find people of color. Well, I bet you, if you thought about it, you would know where to find them. You know where I bet they're at? It's the same place that you go to, the grocery store. Say hi to some. Go to the grocery store, and as you're like looking through which tomatoes you want to get or like which avocados, say hello to someone. Develop relationships with people. Part of it is the class thing, mm-hmm. where, you know, I think that people like only want to like talk to people that are already in their community, but like mm-hmm. break those things down.
Right.
What I think is so good about Tall Ships is that it feels very much, well, in some ways it is like the most accessible to like people who are affluent and white, which is true.
Right.
But
right.
I also feel that it could be accessible to people from all walks of life.
Right.
And it kind of like forces people from all these different communities to be together. And so, you know, you're mentioning my family, and I am very influenced by my mother and my father and, you know, my siblings. But I was also just like a crazy child. Like, my mom will tell the story of when I was 5 or 6 being in the recreational soccer league, mm-hmm. and going up to her after the first practice and being like, why are there no other black people on my soccer team? Like, why am I the only one? And needing to know the answer to that, you know? So that's all. It's always something that I have my eye on, like a hawk. I'm always like, "What is going on here?" I think that it's weird, or like, you know, it's just like things like that. I think it's really important to be thinking every day, like, do you have friends that are not like you? And I said this last year, I think after I wrote that piece, where, you know, there's little changes you can make. Especially mm-hmm. because technically we're still in a pandemic, go to your social media page. Are all of the friends that you have white? Are they mm-hmm. all, you know, are they mostly white men? No. Okay. Let's get to follow some black people. Please follow brown people. Please follow Asian people. Please follow queer people. are all of the people that you follow in the same body type? Make sure that you're following people who, you know, have different ability levels. Make sure you're following people who have different weight. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so part of having the blinders on and saying like, oh, well, there's none of that here where I live. Well, you have a computer in your pocket that you're on all the time. I see you on Facebook. I see you there. So, you know, part of it, and the first baby steps that people can make, even though, you know, we're asking people to make huge strides, and as we should be demanding more of everyone. But part of the baby steps that you can make is changing what you're looking at every day. And if you are looking at and experiencing people's stories that are not like yours, it will be suddenly become much easier for you to understand the way that the systems work and to have empathy and to interact with people in a way that is not awkward, because you know what I mean? It's like, oh, this is the first time I've ever talked to a Black person before. And I've never even seen it happen. But as you begin, you know, to use the computer in your pocket to not only look at people, but engage with people, then it will become easier for you to translate that into your real life. And it will be easier for you not to say things that are absent-minded, shall we say, you know, you're not getting your information from fiction, you're getting your information from real life. And so obviously that comes with, you know, discerning who are the right people to follow. But, you know, most of us are just normal people living our lives. And so you don't need to come on our page looking for, you know, activism or to like anything like that. But just like understand that we're all sharing a lived experience. And it is, I think, on some of the other groups to make those changes. It really, really is.
Yeah. Agreed.
And okay, for example, like with young women at the helm when I did in 2019, I was like, on the one hand, I am Black, and that is great because they'll see someone that is in a position of leadership in the crew, and it is, you know, it's good to see that, because a lot of the times with these programs, it's like, oh, we're going to go and get kids from, quote, I'm doing air quotes now, underserved communities or whatever. And you bring a bunch of Black and brown children onto a boat. The entire crew is white. The captain is white. It's not. And I think that can be harmful where it's like, I guess, but there's not really any way for me to believe you, which is like me as a kid. I would be like, well, I don't know if I believe you, because otherwise I would see it here.
Right.
I think it's really important for in recruitment of leaders and recruitment of, the adult participants for these programs is to be making sure that you're getting people of color. It just so much is. And so we had some returning people that year. I asked one of my friends, she's never been on a boat before. She doesn't know anything about it, but you know, she is really, really good with teenage girls and is so open and tells a lot of jokes. And you know what I mean? And ended up having a really good time with them. But, you know, so again, it's like, I think that, and I say this all the time in the committee, is that we think that we're so like exclusive and like no one's going to get it unless they're already in it. But I think that there's so many, you know, translatable pieces where, you know, in order to grow, in order to sustain, like, I'm sorry, but like we will have to include people who are not white. And in order to do that, we have to figure out the ways in which it is relatable to them. For me, it was relatable to me because of environmental education, but it will be relatable to somebody else because of, you know, engineering or art or history or like whatever is the thing.
You're absolutely right. And I think it's, and what I think is exciting and what you guys are doing on Clearwater is amazing. It feels as though you guys are really at the forefront of this. You've been doing it for a long time. So there's a lot that, you know, and I love how creative you've been by bringing your friend on who's really good with teenage girls, which is arguably the most frightening group in society. So
I love teenage girls, because I'm just like, well, I was already a teenager. So anything that you can think of that's mean, I've already thought of it. So teenagers are actually my favorite group. My brand of environmental education is, it does have content in it, but also it's just like roasting them for 3 hours where it's just like, I am, you know, I'm on the other side of this experience. I'm very secure in myself as a person. There's nothing you can say that's going to be like, oh my God. And then those teenagers said that, like, whatever, like, you're not going to embarrass me at my job. Like, I'm having a great time. So you should also have a good time, because like, I've had more time to like think about what would make someone feel embarrassed. And right. From, again, my own personal experience, it's like when you reflect on those cringe moments from when you were a teenager, it's yes. like, sure, you could in 5 years wake up in your dorm in the middle of the night and be like, oh my God, remember when I was so embarrassing on that boat that one day? Or you could remember it and be like, wow, I had so much fun on that boat that one time. I should do that again instead right. of like being weird. So just have a good time. Have a good time. Or else.
Well, I think that is the most perfect way to end this conversation. It's a little bit sweet, a little bit threatening. Mm-hmm. It's just as absolutely perfect. So I want people to know that they can still, if they're interested, to go to Adventure Sail is on August 14th, where should they go for more information about Adventure Sail if they want to know more about it?
They can go to womensailing.org.
Okay, and then if they want more information about Clearwater and how to donate to Clearwater, where can they find you? Where can they find that?
That is clearwater.org, one word.
Okay. Excellent. Anything else you want to plug? Anything that we missed?
No, you know, if you're in New York, come sailing, come out for a day sail on Clearwater. You can come see me if you have a bone to pick with me after this podcast. But we'll be in town. We're really, really excited to get back out on the river this year. We're really excited to be able to traverse the entire part of the river that we can get to. So Albany all the way down to Brooklyn. We're so, so excited about all the things we've been doing with social media. Please follow us at Sloop Clearwater, one word. You know, we've been doing a lot of really great things in the last year, and I would like you all to join us on that journey.
Yeah, I can attest, you guys have absolutely, when the pandemic happened, you were one of the first groups to truly embrace going virtual. It was impressive. It was like you had this in your pocket and you're like, yes, pandemic, let's do this. And it was like, I was like, how are they coming up with all this content right now? It was truly impressive. So I will include all of those links and handles in the show description. Amali, thank you so much. This was an absolute pleasure, and I am absolutely serious when I say we should get your dad on here, because he sounds really interesting.
A Bark, a Brig, and a Schooner Walk Into a Bar is a Tall Ships America production. Theme music provided by Kebab Studios. You can find us in all the usual places, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Tall Ships America, and on our website at tallshipsamerica.org. Send us your sea stories or drop us a line at manager@tallshipsamerica.org. As always, be sure to support your local tall ship.